Heykatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Heykatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're wading into maybe some tricky waters, economics. It often feels pretty overwhelming, yeah. Right? And so polarizing.
Definitely. And it feels like everyone's shouting, you know, experts disagree, data seems conflicting. It's hard to know what to believe on things like immigration or climate change.
Exactly. So our mission today is to cut through some of that ideology, that noise, using a really important book as our guide, Good Economics for Hard Times.
It's by Abhijit Banerjee and Esther Duflo, who you might know as Nobel laureates. And it's crucial because, well, public trust in experts is pretty low right now.
Yeah, and this book tries to tackle that head on. It draws a sharp line between what the authors call bad economics.
Which is, you know, the stuff based on rigid ideology, maybe grand theories that sound good but don't hold up, political talking points.
Right, versus good economics.
And good economics, they argue, is different. It's humble. It looks at the actual evidence, acknowledges things are complicated, and it keeps people, actual human beings, at the center.
It's really about rebuilding trust by showing what careful evidence-based work can actually tell us about these really tough problems.
Mm-hmm. It's about show economics can be a tool for good if done right.
So let's talk about the authors. Abhijit Banerjee and Esther Duflo, they're professors at MIT, and they co-founded JPAL, the Abdul Latif Jameel Poverty Action Lab.
And as you said, they won the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2019, along with Michael Kremer.
What was really significant about that Nobel, though, was why they won it. It was for their method.
Exactly. Their experimental approach to fighting global poverty. They really pioneered using randomized controlled trials, RCTs, in economics.
Which sounds maybe a bit technical, but the idea is borrowed from medicine, right? Like testing a new drug.
Precisely. You have a group that gets the policy intervention, say, a tutoring program, and a control group that doesn't. Then you rigorously compare the outcomes.
So instead of just theorizing about whether tutoring works, you actually test it in the real world.
Yeah. It forces economists to get their hands dirty, to look at the actual impact on real people, not just assume things based on abstract models.
It brings a certain humility, I think.
Absolutely. And I love how they describe themselves. They say they aren't prophets with some grand vision for everything.
Right. They're plumbers.
Yeah. Plumbers patiently figuring out what's wrong in specific situations, like a leaky pipe in the system and testing targeted fixes. It's very grounded.
That plumber versus prophet idea really captures the book's core argument, doesn't it? That economics needs less certainty, less ideology, and more complexity, more evidence.
Mm-hmm. And the whole book is basically an exercise in myth-busting based on that approach.
Yeah.
They take on these popular ideas from, you know, both sides of the aisle.
Like the idea that immigrants are just going to steal all the jobs. They show the data often tells a very different story.
But they also challenge the sort of free trade is always good for everyone idea, which has been dominant in some circles.
And they use solid evidence to push back against that really persistent kind of paternalistic idea that if you give cash to people in poverty, they'll just, you know, waste it.
Yeah, they replace those myths with a much more complex and frankly more realistic picture. Two big ideas keep coming up. First, this concept of stickiness.
Stickiness?
Yeah, the stickiness of reality, meaning economic shocks like a factory closing have really deep, long-lasting negative effects. People and communities don't just bounce back instantly.
Okay, that makes sense. Things get stuck.
And second, that people aren't just calculators trying to maximize income. We're driven by dignity, by identity, by wanting respect. Policies that ignore that human element, they're likely to fail.
Okay, so let's dig into some of those specific myths they bust with data. Starting with immigration, always a flashpoint. The common fear is immigrants come in, compete for jobs, drive down wages for everyone else.
Right, the classic lump of labor fallacy. The idea that there's only a fixed number of jobs, like a pie, and if someone new takes a slice, your slice gets smaller.
It feels kind of intuitive, though, doesn't it? More workers, same number of jobs. Shouldn't wages fall? That's basic supply and demand.
Well, that's where the good economics, the plumbing, comes in. The economy isn't static like that. Immigrants also buy things. They start businesses. They might do jobs that complement existing workers, allowing the whole economy to actually grow or adapt.
And the key piece of evidence they use for this is the Mariel boat lift.
Ah, yeah. Miami, 1980. huge sudden influx of Cuban immigrants, about 125,000 people, mostly lower-skilled workers. It increased Miami's labor force by, what, 7%? Almost overnight?
A perfect natural experiment, really.
So what happened to wages for the low-skilled workers already there?
Well, according to the careful studies they cite, remarkably little. There was basically negligible impact on wages or unemployment for those existing workers.
Negligible, not the huge drop you'd expect from the simple model.
Nope. It really showed how dynamic and adaptable labor markets can be, much more than the sort of simplistic lump of labor idea allows for. Okay, so the economy can absorb immigration better than feared. But what about international trade? That's another area where the standard economic story was maybe too simple.
Oh, definitely. For decades, the consensus was pretty much free trade is great, full stop. It makes the country richer overall.
Which, in aggregate, might be true. But Banerjee and Duflo argue economists made a huge mistake by ignoring the distribution. Who gets the benefits and who pays the costs?
Exactly. They obsessed over the size of the total pie, not how it was sliced. The benefits, maybe slightly cheaper TVs or shoes, are spread super thin across millions of consumers. We all gain a tiny bit.
But the costs, they're incredibly concentrated. If your town's main factory shuts down because of import competition, that's not a small cost for you or your community. It's devastating.
And this is where the China shock research comes in. It studied what happened to U.S. areas that were heavily exposed to competition from Chinese manufacturing imports, especially after China joined the WTO.
And the assumption was, well, those workers would just move somewhere else, get new jobs, right? The market would adjust.
That was the theory. But the reality, it was much harsher. Those exposed regions saw long-term declines in jobs, wages, marriage rates.
And increases in things like disability claims, even deaths of despair, suicides, overdoses. It paints a really grim picture of the human cost.
It's that stickiness again. People are rooted in their communities. They have houses, families, social networks. They don't just pick up and move easily when their industry disappears. The market doesn't just smoothly correct itself without immense pain.
So the simple trade is always good. Story completely missed that human dimension, that stickiness.
Pretty much. It highlights a real blind spot in a lot of mainstream economic thinking at the time.
Okay, let's pivot to the third big area, technology and automation. The fear here is usually about robots taking all the jobs, mass unemployment.
Right. And the authors say, well, history suggests that's probably not the main issue. Technological revolutions historically have created new jobs, even as they destroyed old ones. The real problem isn't necessarily the quantity of jobs.
It's the quality.
Exactly. What the data shows happening now is polarization. Automation seems to be hitting middle-skill, routine jobs the hardest. The kinds of jobs that used to offer a stable path to the middle class.
Like assembly line work or certain kinds of office administration. Jobs that can be codified and done by software or machines.
Precisely.
Okay.
So you end up with growth in high-skill, creative, analytical jobs at the top.
The engineers, the managers.
And growth in low-skill, non-routine service jobs at the bottom. Think food service, elder care, delivery drivers. Jobs that require human interaction or dexterity that robots aren't good at yet.
But the middle gets hollowed out.
That seems to be the pattern. So the policy focus shouldn't just be, you know, fear the robots. It should be on how we strengthen social safety nets.
Yeah.
And maybe more importantly, how we actively foster the creation of good jobs. Jobs with decent wages, stability, and a sense of dignity and purpose to replace those vanishing middle skill roles.
Okay, so pulling these threads together, what are the big overarching themes we should take away from good economics for hard times?
Well, the first one is absolutely clear. The primacy of empirical evidence. Don't just rely on theory or ideology. Ask, what does the actual data say? Use RCTs, use natural experiments. Let the evidence guide policy.
Okay, evidence first. What else?
Second is that concept we keep mentioning, the stickiness of economic and social realities. Economies don't adjust instantly or painlessly. People are attached to places. Communities matter. Policy has to account for that friction, that inertia.
You can't just assume people will move or retrain overnight.
Exactly. And third, and this feels really central to their whole worldview, is human dignity as a core economic factor.
Dignity. How does that fit into economics?
Well, they argue people aren't just driven by money. We're driven by a need for respect, for social standing, for purpose in our work and lives. Policies that ignore this, that treat people like cogs in a machine or assume the worst of them.
Like assuming people getting cash aid will just be lazy.
Right. Those policies are not only morally questionable, they argue, but often just ineffective because they misunderstand human motivation. Dignity Matters for Economic Outcomes.
Those are powerful themes, and the book is full of memorable ways of putting things, too.
Oh, absolutely. Some lines really stick with you.
One that stands out is near the beginning, almost like their motto, economics is too important to be left to economists.
Yeah, which sounds provocative, but the point isn't to ignore economists entirely. It's that the conversation needs to be broader.
It needs to include the perspectives of people actually affected. It needs to consider psychology, sociology, the things traditional models sometimes miss.
Exactly. Open up the conversation. Another key takeaway, based on tons of evidence, relates to global cash transfer programs.
Like GiveDirectly, where they just give cash to very poor households.
Right. The evidence from these programs, run all over the world, is overwhelming. It consistently, powerfully debunks that old paternalistic myth that the poor will just waste the money or stop working.
So what do they do with it?
They invest it in their kids' education, in healthcare, in starting small businesses, fixing their roofs. It shows that trusting people, treating them with dignity, is actually incredibly effective policy.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And then there's their sharp critique of how trade policy was handled.
Yes. They basically say the mainstream economic consensus was entirely oblivious to the fact that the costs of globalization were real, severe, and concentrated on specific groups.
Well, the benefits went elsewhere. It wasn't just an analytical failure, but maybe an ethical one, too, by ignoring who was paying the price.
It's a strong indictment, but one based on looking carefully at the long-term fallout.
So how can we, you know, as engaged citizens, use these insights in our own lives or when thinking about policy?
Well, the book is really a toolkit for critical thinking. It helps you push back against overly simplistic narratives.
So in political debates, for instance, if you hear a politician making a sweeping claim about immigrants crashing wages or free trade being a magic bullet,
you can use the book's framework. Ask, okay, where's the evidence for that? Is there an RCT or a natural experiment? And crucially, if this policy creates losers, which most big changes do, what's the concrete plan to help them?
It forces the conversation towards data and towards fairness, away from just slogans.
Exactly. And for anyone involved in policy or community work, the message is about empathy and trust.
Remember that dignity piece.
Right. Design programs, assuming people want to improve their lives, that they are rational actors within their own circumstances. Stop designing based on the assumption that people in need are inherently lazy or untrustworthy. The evidence suggests that's just wrong and leads to bad policy.
It's about designing with people, not for them, in a way.
Well put.
You know, thinking back on the whole book, one thing that really struck me, especially from chapter 5, was their critique of our obsession with GDP growth.
Yeah. The idea that chasing that one number, GDP growth, above all else, might be misguided.
Right. They argue we need a much more holistic view of progress, focusing on things that actually improve quality of life, like better health, cleaner air, less inequality, more social trust, even if it doesn't maximize the headline growth number.
It's a call to rethink what we even mean by economic success. Maybe it's not just about how big the pie is, but how good the pie tastes and if everyone gets a fair slice.
That's a great way to put it.
For me, the lasting takeaway is just how fundamentally human the economy is. It's not some abstract machine governed by fixed laws. It's a messy, complex system driven by people with all our biases, our attachments, our need for dignity.
So simple answers are almost always wrong.
Almost always. The path forward, they argue, means embracing that complexity, demanding real evidence, and bringing a lot more compassion and humility to how we think about economic policy.
A really powerful and, frankly, necessary message for the hard times we find ourselves in. This book gives you the tools to demand better.
Better economics and hopefully better outcomes.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by ACATRA Foundation.